You're listening to a Strange Assembly review. You can subscribe to the full Strange Assembly podcast on iTunes or by visiting our website at www.strangeassembly.com. Enjoy. This is the Strange Assembly review of Rune Age, a deck-building game from Fantasy Flight. I'm Chris Stevenson.
I'm Jay Earl.
I'm Mike Cook.
Rune Age is one of the entries in Fantasy Flight's, let's call them upsized, Silver Lion games. They went from, I think, a $20 price point to a $30 price point. It is, like we said, a deck-building game. I think it's fair to say that in terms of game design, it is the most, I don't know if advanced is the right word, but it has progressed the most in the deck building genre, which, you know, has its ups and downs depending on what you're looking for in a game.
It's trying the hardest. Yeah. If nothing else.
It's the one pushing the limits right now.
Yeah. So it's got factions, it's got three different kinds of resources, it's got multiple different sorts of scenarios. You can adjust it between heavy PvP, almost very no PvP.
It Julian's fries.
Yes. It will not break. It will not break. Oh, it broke. As every game that has the word rune in the title, it is set in Terranoth. Although I know nothing about Terranoth, and I don't think you have to know anything about Terranoth to play the game. Like most deck-building games, you start with two different categories of cards in your deck. In Rune Age, you're starting with 5 1 gold cards and then 3 basic military units. Unlike most deck-building games, your starting hand is actually not big enough to make it through the first two turns, so starting with your second turn, you have the possibility, at least, of having the new cards in your deck right away.
I like that. I like that quite a bit.
Yeah. Normally, I'd start by here saying, this is how you win, but there's 4 different scenarios, and each of them has a different way to win. So, within the deck, you personally have a 5-card, I think they call it a barracks, of cards that only you can access. And what those 5 cards are is the same in every game, and which 5 you have is based on your faction. There's an undead faction, there's a chaos faction, demons, something.
Demons.
There is a faction of knights, and there is a faction of elves. Each of them has a distinctive sort of flavor. The undead are heavily based around bringing back reanimating skeletons, essentially.
Right, which is why you get in trouble when you reshuffle your deck.
Yeah. The knights tend to try to draw cards off the top of the deck to see what happens. The elves let you access your resources multiple times in a turn, and the chaos guys are good at damaging their own stuff to get greater effect.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to those cards, every game has out in the middle the 3 money cards. It's just 1 gold, 2 gold, 3 gold. It has a variable number of city cards. The more players there are, the more cities. And then it has 3 other cards, neutral cards, that can do a variety of things. They all go in your deck, but it who knows what it is. And like I said, there are 3 resources, and they interact in a relatively complex way. Your deck starts with gold and a little bit of military. And it requires gold to buy the units in your barracks, and the units in your barracks, for the most part, produce military.
Yeah.
And then what you do with military is take cities, or there's one specific stronghold card that's in your barracks. Cities and the stronghold card produce influence, and then you use influence to purchase the neutral cards in the middle of the deck. Then there's those 3 money, the 3 gold cards.
In the middle of the play area.
And not the middle of the deck. Yeah, just that are sitting out there in the middle in the neutral area of the table. And there's the 3 gold cards, which, you know, brings it back around to that's how you buy units. Plus there are those 3 other neutral cards, which can have random effects or can be more military producing things. So like I said, it's really taking it to another level. Not only are there three resources, I mean, there's other deck building games that have done two resources, but those resources are all intertwined in a very unique way. You don't just keep on building within one resource, or which is basically what the Penny Arcade deck building game did, or Ascension, where you're, you know, mostly, okay, there's the buying stuff resource, and then there's the fighting resource, and the two don't meet a ton.
You tend to specialize in the other games.
Yeah, whereas in this, you can't really.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I said, there are four different ways to play this. Each scenario is designed to be used with an exact particular set of cards in the middle, although you probably could change some of that up if you wanted.
Yeah, it even says in the rule book that those are the suggested cards that you use with them, but that you can swap them out as you choose.
Yeah, depending on the scenario, you may have more or less options. For when you're in the purely co-op ones, a lot of them are kind of silly because they're about jacking the other players up. So the other aspect of cards that are out there that you do not have in your decks is there's a scenario card, basically, and an event deck. And each scenario has its own event deck. And those event cards get flipped up starting on the second turn cycle. They get flipped up before each turn cycle. They mostly are bad things that happen. They're either enemies that go out in the middle of the table that you can use military to defeat, or they're a one-shot effect that messes you up with you in some way. So the pure co-op mode is called Cataclysm is what they call it. But there's a pure co-op mode, which is you just have to survive the nasty event deck, basically with the players working together and not doing anything to hurt each other.
Right.
There's the monument scenario, which is you win that game by buying your monument. So you have to get up to a high gold point. And you can attack each other in that game, but your attacks are limited to trying to steal cities that other players have acquired with
their
military. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you can do stuff with military, but you cannot win militarily. You have to have gold production. The third scenario, which is the Return of the Dragon Lords, you win that with military by destroying the scenario card, which is just a really, really hard nut to crack, but you can kill other players.
Yep. But that doesn't let you win, even if you eliminate all the other players.
Yes, yes. In fact, we played a game earlier today where
I took out
two of the other players. One of the events took out Mike, and then the events just wore me down because I just didn't have enough to beat the Dragon Lord before I got checked. Because the events in that scenario, the events basically cycle back in, and so I was just getting pounded over and over and over again.
Yeah, the event deck is split, typically, except for one of the scenarios, into two. It's like about half one and half two stage. They're just shuffled and put right on top of each other, so the beginning effects are generally pretty mild, and then it builds to the second effects. And the second effects get shoveled back in.
Yeah, but not the mild first stage ones. You can be nasty in PvP with each other, but you ultimately can't win that way. And so the kind of combat that adds into attacking the cities is that you can attack other players' home base as well, which basically has 20 health, and you can attack it. When you get into a fight with another player, whether you're attacking a city or their home base, both of you are just playing military units out of your hand. A lot of them do stuff when they come into play. They might mess up the other units. By default, all the units just go back in your discard pile, although there are a reasonable number of cards that destroy other units. One difference between Runeage and most other deck building games is that anything that gets destroyed goes back into the pile to be bought again, which actually causes some problems in some corner cases. You'll have a card that has a really good effect that has destroyed as a cost, and so you can play it, which destroys it, and then you could just rebuy it. But when you're going after a city, mostly all that matters is that you beat their total. When you're going after their home base, however much you beat them by, you deal damage in order to stop players from getting completely ganged up on at the end of every single player's turn. You always refill your hand back up to the five cards. The final scenario is called Rune Wars. It's purely PvP. You're just trying to kill each other. And the wrinkle in addition to the wrinkle that one adds is that every player gets a dragon rune card, which gives them a little special power that they can mostly use. I think all of them are basically every turn cycle at least you get to use them.
And in the spirit of Highlander, there can be only one. So every time you knock somebody off, you get their rune.
Yes, you get their rune, and then you have to decide which of the runes you want to use. I think you can't just have three runes sitting in front of you, and that's just last man standing wins. So what do you guys think overall about the game?
I like the game. In a lot of ways, I like the game a lot. I actually have purchased every single one of the Runebound Universe games. I've played all of them, and it's very consistent, especially starting with Rune Wars. They really started to get the identity of Tyranoth and all that type of place really set in. So these four factions are the same ones you'll find in Rune Wars. They're the exact same, and they play very similarly. So the elves are very much about resource building. Their units don't stick around quite as much, but they do extra things. The humans are kind of sturdy, but just kind of back each other up. The Ulthak, the like kind of chaosy people, are very tactical. So they'll sacrifice people, but they'll get a big benefit out of it. And the undead, once again, are about making hordes and hordes of skeletons and just running you over with them. So it's kind of cool seeing the cities. Part of that is the art. I have to say that the art in this game probably stands out to me almost more than anything. I take it for granted out of a Fantasy Flight game anymore. Their art's almost always just fantastic. But this one specifically, when I was playing it at Gen Con, quite a few people were sold just on the art. Like, they just absolutely love the cities and whatnot. So it's cool to see that. I like that it builds complexity. They're pushing the complexity button, and they're doing it in a sophisticated way that, in my opinion, only really Fantasy Flight does anymore. Some of the European game places do that too, but this one is really trying to make you, not only is there three resources, you can't ignore any of the resources. The different scenarios make you focus on a different resource, typically. So the Monument's going to make you focus on gold, and the Resurgence of the Dragon Lord is going to make you focus on military. But for the most part, in none of the modes can you ever ignore it. Part of the Monument, the Latari elves are very good at the influence, the one that lets you buy the stuff in the middle. And so to kind of compensate that, since the influence is what buys you gold, they would have a big advantage very quickly of, just sneaking in and buying their Monument really, really fast. And there was a couple of times, because I played Latari elves when we were playing it, there were a couple of times I could have won if my monument was only 10. So that's a pretty good balance. But the thing is, I did still try and build that way. And since I did that, since there was there's a card that you could buy that was a very high influence cost. But once you did it, you played it, you get to look at somebody's hand and take the card out of their hand. So while I did that, Chris and Jay and Kevin all did more of the influence stuff, more of like a medium road, and it stopped me because I hit a high point where my deck was thinned, but it wasn't quite to where I needed it to be. So because I didn't focus on military until towards the end of the game, I really kind of suffered.
Yeah, and the way that the Monument scenario makes military matter, and this is pretty good design on their part, is that event deck has a lot of enemies that pop up that when you defeat them, they come into play as rewards, I believe they're called, and they produce gold, which is what you need to win the game. Because gold doesn't buy gold, because it's a multi-resource system, that Monument thing probably, it would have a very hard time working in something like Dominion, because everything would fuel in on itself.
Yeah.
It works because of the way that the different mechanics build in around themselves. There's only ever a limited amount of influence available because it's just a handful of cities that start on the board and they can pass around, but you can't just keep on buying a ton of them. So you can't ever go, and even though you can buy as many as you want of a particular card in a turn, you're never going to be able to buy three gold cards in one turn. I think literally in that scenario, you can't.
Yeah, you had all the buildings. You should know.
At what point in time I had all of
the cities.
The neutral cities. Yeah. You could buy two, and I was mostly buying mine. Well, at that point, there were no golds left because we also made the decision earlier in the game. There's something
not
that flips up.
Not knowing the value of the gold.
Well, you can either trash cards from your hand or you can trash some gold out of the middle of the deck. It's like, so everybody's like, oh, I'll just get it out of the middle. Who cares? This hampers everyone equally.
Hey, now, I would have not trashed from my hand, but I didn't have enough. Well, you had to have two of a specific type, and I only had the one.
I actually had it, but I decided, you know, I've gotten a couple gold. I don't know if anybody's seen me get a couple gold already, and it'd only been like fourth or fifth turn or something. I was like, I'll trash it because I'm in a better position. I'll probably be able to get it faster, but that hurt
me. I don't know that it was a mistake for us to do what we did. It was just that in the long run, it had the impact of stretching the game out because we just
the resources
could not
weren't available.
Buy, yeah, there just weren't enough golds to buy to get people's decks up to a higher threshold with that.
Well, because I think I had most of the golds, but because mine cost more, I think if more other people had been able to get the gold, they might have been able to hit it faster. But since I had most of the gold, but I still couldn't hit mine, it kind of put us in this weird equilibrium.
Yeah. What did you think, Jay?
I mean, I enjoyed the game. I feel like I haven't played it enough to really get a handle of the strategy that... I think I've got the mechanics of the balancing of the resources kind of okay, but... Yeah. I mean, it's a complicated game. That's a good thing. I would definitely like to play it a few more times before I feel good saying, oh yeah, I'm good at that game.
And I think one of its strengths is probably also one of its weaknesses. I would never take this to a non-gamer and get them to try and play this game. It is just going to be confusion, I think. Also, like, I've played this the solitaire component to it, the Cataclysm. You can do solitaire where you're just trying to survive the event deck. You literally have to be so good at deck building and be able to build your deck so fast. Like, you have to have some experience at it.
Yeah, I mean, even not necessarily like a non-gamer, but I mean, I have a couple friends who I play board games with fairly regularly that I wouldn't try to get them to play this game. They would hate it.
I think this is...
I mean, it's really for a non-casual gamer.
I think it's a deck builder's deck game. It's like for the power dominion power gamer would have, you know, a lot of interest in this possible.
I think that is part of it. All of these other things that we call deck building games, I think there is a lot of area, a lot of space left to plumb within the concept of the deck building game, because really at the core of it, it's deck building is just another way to go into this core game mechanic of what your resource construction is. It's, you know, it's instead of having tokens or pieces or something, you just build everything into this one aspect of the game. And Dominion is a very pure expression of that, and it's all about that. And so a lot of the games that have come out, they add new things, but they're still within that same basic concept where everything feels like it's just about how do I build my deck. I actually think that this one is, it's not that how you build your deck isn't important, but there's a lot more strategy that you have to think about.
There's more resources than just the deck that you need to balance.
There's just a lot of different ways you can do it, different things you can do. When you flip your hand on your turn, there are actually choices that you have to make other than, oh, well, there are 10 cards out there. Which one do I want to buy? Because there's one that's always the best.
Well, I think the first two turns almost always, at least for me, are always going to be buying the strongholds.
That,
but beyond that, they don't add to your deck. So those two turns are kind of steady. But other than that, even then, somebody took a city. I think you took a city on one of our first turns.
I think there was a game where...
And that played out poorly for me.
Jay took a city on the first turn, and then on his first turn,
you took it from me.
And on my next turn, I took it away. The strongholds that you buy out of your barracks, no one can ever steal them. So you can always have a little bit of... And those cards, unlike everything else in the game, can be bought with two different resources. You can either buy them with military or with
gold.
With money. Yeah, so you can...
Gold.
Yeah, it always gives you some way of accessing... influence.
Yep.
You could always get that little bit of influence out and then use those to buy two gold cards. So it's hard to compare this. I don't know if hard is right. It does not directly compare to other deck building games. This is not something where you're like, well, I have Dominion and I have Thunderstone and I have Nightfall, so why would I need another deck building game? It really doesn't play at all like the rest of those. Just the addition of the mechanics adds in a whole other layer of variety and strategy into the game. The downside of that, I guess it's a downside, is what you were talking about, Mike, is that this is a gamer game. One of the things I like about Dominion is that I can take that and I can actually play that with family. And that is, you know, I guess it's like with every other genre, where there are, you know, more straightforward and then more complex aspects of games. And that can be a plus or a minus, depending on what it is that you want in your gaming experience. Oddly enough, it felt like a downside for this, even though with all that sort of variety, the stuff that was available to purchase in the game, I wish it changed up a little more. You can play one faction or the other, and that faction will have a completely different set of In the Barracks cards than everybody else does. But if you're that faction, it's always exactly the same set of cards. And out of the stuff to buy in the middle of the table, there's really only three different cards. The cities are...
There's not
a lot of difference. I mean, yeah, right. They cost slightly more military to take. It produces slightly more influence. Yeah, again, there's some variation. The one that costs 4 military might be out there. The one that costs 9 might be, but nothing that's going to affect how the game feels. And so if you've got a given deck in a given scenario, it plays the same way each time. So it will be interesting to see. I don't know if... I mean, I guess they will if it sells well, because everybody adds more stuff on if it sells well.
Right.
But I guess it would be interesting to see how you would add
more
cards into the barracks for a particular faction. You know, presumably your base one cost guy that you start with some of in your deck is always going to have to be the same. But it would be nice to see that change up and a greater variety of cards for in the middle as well. It would probably mess up the game balance. I almost want to say, like, I wonder what it would be like to put 6 different cards in the middle. But one of the other things that's different about this is that there is not only are there 3 different cards in the middle to the buy, but they're very scarce. The stack is 5.
Yeah,
so
for a 4-player game.
The stack is N+1.
It's N+1, yeah. So probably you're only getting 2 of whatever it is unless someone gets unlucky. About what they're...
And even the cities are also N+1. So that you pretty much forces you to fight over them, unless you're just happy with one guy having 2 cities.
You might not bother to fight over the cities if whatever you want in the middle that costs influence is depleted, if all the demons are bought up, the cap card in a couple of the scenarios. It's just a powerful unit that can't be destroyed in the middle of the fight.
Building on what you were saying, the one thing I felt was kind of missing out of this is, yes, you can fight for the cities and whatnot, and the cities will let you buy cards in the middle, but there's so little to buy in the middle. Number one, it's really easy to miss on something. And the cards in the middle, typically there's like one that's a deck reducer. Well, you always want a deck reducer. I mean, you almost never want to... There's almost no time where you don't want to thin your deck. And then the other two are usually big, beefy units, are typically pretty good. So you almost always want as many of those cards as you probably can. Whereas Dominion, your choice is, or a lot of other deck-building games, your choice is, there's plenty available for the most part. Which ways do I want to specialize? It's more like, when do I try to get these?
Right,
so,
before they
as
run
soon
out.
As humanly possible.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is with 5, so someone might end up with 2 and everybody else ends up with 1, or you might get what was happening with me. I tried going another way in a couple of games, and Kevin had the same thing happen, and I missed out on a couple of cards. Like, I never got a demon, and he never got the deck thinner.
Yeah, one of the deck thinners is a sorcerer, which is a little unit, and that ended up that...
Those went
fast. I maybe got 3 of them right away, and so...
Something like that, yeah.
But you're not supposed to get more than 2, or else somebody's not getting any, and the one gold card is, I mean, as they often are, it's atrocious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You desperately want those things out of your deck. They're not any good for buying anything. Money often feels, if you're not in the monument, money often feels less important as the game goes on.
Well, I mean, the thing that kind of
especially in small amounts.
Right. The thing that kind of mitigates that, though, is for the majority of the factions, the low cost units still have some purpose. Even though they're not very high military and you still don't want too many of them, they combo pretty well. And that's one of the things that they've probably done the best. They don't have as many deck thinners, but they don't quite need it as much as they normally
would. Right, I mean, it doesn't feel like, oh, in a lot of other games, you'll be like, oh, I've got one money to spend. There's nothing to do with it. Here, oh, I've got one money to spend. I'll buy my cheap guy. He's fine to go in the deck.
Yeah, and the other thing is that monsters that you attack, there's an attrition die. For most of the monsters, and it's a black die they include with the game. I think it's two sides are blank. It's a six-sided die. It's two sides are blank, like three sides are one skull, and one side is two skull. Whenever you attack, you play all your guys out to attack. Yeah. And you have to roll a die, and whatever you roll, how many of your skulls you roll, that's how many units you have to destroy back to their piles before you even count whether or not you actually have won. So that's another way that they kind of force you to thin the deck, because you actually want those cheap guys to be able to absorb that damage, even a lot of times at a higher level. So they do have some of that built in, but I don't know. The other weird thing is that you fight for influence. Like, the cities are what provide influence, the majority of the influence, other than the little bit of strongholds that you have. So what I found, you found the most interaction was where I'm trying to steal your city from you. So I like that interaction. The problem was, a lot of times towards the middle of the game, there's nothing to buy with. Like, you know, besides
the gold. Why bother going after your city? Because
once those piles are gone, there's nothing to go after.
Yeah, well, I had games as the, I'm going to call them the knights. I know they have a flavor name in Tyranoth. I would launch attacks on cities so I could play some of my cards some of the units that said draw a card to hopefully get something that would, this is in the Monument Center, and I'm like, okay, let's see if we can get up some more gold,
get some money,
to actually hit the 11, because the human needs to hit 11 as well, probably because they have the card draw. The elves have more of an ability to, the thing that the elves do with the resources is that they, let's call it untap, the cities.
Well, their base unit can untap, when it's played, it can untap something that creates influence, city or stronghold. Yeah,
and influence is what buys money, so that lets them buy money better, whereas the humans have a little bit better of an ability to draw into money.
They thin their deck out, kind of, not really thin it, but they go through it pretty fast. The elves also have their level 2 character. You can put it into play as a 2-influence card, but once it's done at the end of the turn, it gets destroyed.
Yeah.
So they have another option that way, too.
Yeah. I think the other downside is that the undead seem a little good, especially
in the
PvP scenarios.
Yeah. I mean, they have a really fast opening game.
Yeah. The central card of the undead deck is called Reanimate. And it's just a 1 military unit that costs 1. You start with 3 of them. And every time you put one into play, if you have one in your discard pile, you can put it into play. It doesn't trigger again. But they get to open up really strongly because, you know, your usual starting hand, it's going to have a reanimate or 2 in it and then some 1 gold cards. And so you spend a 1 gold card to put a reanimate in your discard pile, and then you can go after one of your stronghold cards, which requires 2 mility to take. You play 1 reanimate out of your hand, bring the other one back in from the discard pile, and then snag your stronghold. And then if you have 2 reanimates in your starting hand, you just
get both of your strongholds.
You get to get both of your strongholds, whereas nobody else can do that. Everybody else can only ever get 1, and so that immediately gets you your influence going faster, which I think in both the PvP and the semi-PvP scenario, there's a juicy 2 influence card to pick up. I know there is, and I know the Battle Cry and the semi-PvP one,
the second one,
is really good. And then just more quickly, you can start running into the center of the board to get the cities. And what happened in like the game we played today, where I was the undead and you were playing the semi PvP, the demon is the big influence card in the middle. So I was able to get 3 of the 5 super units in addition to having all the reanimates that come in. I mean, the deck can get pounded on if people want to, because once you reshuffle your deck and you don't have reanimates in your discard pile, you can have trouble and sometimes you get the hand on your defense. It's like, well, I get to refill this, but it's never going to get empty to get refilled because it just had all coins in it or all gold in it to start with. But and then it matters less in some of the other scenarios, but yeah, they don't really seem balanced entirely.
The one thing that I do like about it, they do feel very different, which is not the case for most deck building games. Well, your deck feels a little bit different depending on how you're building it, but this, you're coming into it knowing that it's basically going to work one of maybe two ways, depending on what you're buying. But at the same point, the balance seems a little bit... The elves can be very strong, but you have to know what you're doing, like, way ahead of time. I felt like the humans are actually probably overall the weakest, just in my personal opinion, or how my experience with it. But, yeah, no, the balance doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah. Well, the elves definitely have a weak opening game.
Yeah.
Because they aren't really in a position to do anything with their little straightener base guy.
No, I mean, they're pretty good. They're actually kind of stronger in the middle game where they really... Actually, I think they're better in the end game because the middle game is where they really start to attack you and then get influence back. So theoretically, the middle is where they really...
buy.
Right, whereas the undead begin like burst really hard at the beginning. The middle is more where the elves come in. But the problem is sometimes, you know, the undead doesn't really stop. So it's not like the middle for the undead is really that much slower.
Yeah. Okay, any final thoughts, Jay?
I enjoyed the game. Again, I wouldn't give it to everybody. It is a complicated game, but if you've got a group that likes complicated games, I would definitely recommend it.
I liked it when I played it. I bought it at Gen Con. One of the positives I think that should be said is that it is a $35 game, so it's relatively inexpensive for this type of game. I feel like it was a good value for what I got. Rune Age... And this kind of leads back into it. The Rune Age, I like it. I like a lot of what it's trying to do. I really like how they're pushing it. I like the design. What you were saying about putting six cards in, I thought about that too. But it feels so well-designed or so streamlined-designed, I feel like I'm going to break something trying to change something like that. But at the same point, as much as I like the individual pieces, I like the theme, I like how we lost the first one because we were squabbling, and the Dragon Lords came in and killed all of our cities. Well, that actually feels pretty thematic to me. Which is a problem that you get with a lot of the other deck building games. A lot of times that theme falls through. But at the end of the day, it's not one I'm rushing to play again. It's not one I'm rushing to bring out to my friends. You know, I've got a ton of games, and this is just not one. Like, a lot of the games ended up feeling kind of stalemated and slow, and that's been a consistent...
Well, part of that was our fault that we were... Yes, some of those games, like you said, we went after each other too much in the semi-PvP where taking each other out is not the win condition. Yeah, I guess in the Monument game, once the gold runs out, it starts feeling harder to... Like, it says you're trying to build up to more money, and once the high gold value cards start to run out. But again, part of that was, I think it went longer than it should have, but that was partially because we weren't playing very well. I really think we were not playing well. We like I was saying, like, in that that was the first time I had played the Monument game, and I didn't really realize until well into the game how important it was to take out the enemies that
instead of fighting us
that permanently come into play and provide you with gold. And yeah, I won that game, but it took longer than it should have. So I think that if we were slightly more competent in our playthroughs, that would not have been an issue.
Well, and see, and that's the thing, is I feel like Rune Age is one of those games you basically have to know what you're going to do just about going into it. So you've got to change up your strategy, but you really have to keep your eye on the prize the whole game. It takes a lot of concentration. But at the same point, it feels like the more you play it, the more you might get out of it, kind of like the best CCGs.
Okay, so that was Rune Age from Fantasy Flight Games. It's one of their Silverline games, so like Mike said, it does come in at a relatively low price point. I think we would all agree that it really takes the deck building genre in a new and different and interesting place, that it's good to see it go. I like the genre, but there's only so much you can plumb out of the the basic stuff. I think we've, between Dominion and then Thunderstone and Ascension, I think you've seen a lot of that base area already plumbed. So if you are mildly interested in deck building games and you want to see what can be done with that sort of mechanic to make it more of a heavier strategy game, I think that Rune Age, that would be the sort of thing that you would like. For Jay Earl and Mike Hook, I'm Chris Stevenson, and this has been Strange Assembly. You've been listening to Strange Assembly. You can download more episodes of Strange Assembly on iTunes or from our website at www.strangeassembly.com. While you're at our website, you can check out the frequently updated main page or talk with us on the forums. You can also email me directly at chris@strangeassembly.com, or you can follow Strange Assembly on Facebook or Twitter. Strange Assembly, either place. Thanks for listening.